Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom. You are listening to Financial Survival. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Yes, it's not Wednesday, it's Tuesday. And yes, I am joining Alfred Addis today for today's program. And I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. There's lots of things to talk about. We're going to talk about the unemployment rates. We're going to talk about consumer confidence. And we're going to talk about the NSA and many, many other things. But first, before we begin that part, let's talk about gold today. And I'm very pleased with gold today. She didn't end up positive, but we're looking at the rates right now down 50 cents at $13.2770. Silver was down 11 cents today at $19.84, along with platinum down 4 at $14.41, and palladium was down 16 at $732. And you might ask, well, why are you pleased with gold? It's down 50 cents. Well, they had it down $10 all the way to $13.16. It clawed itself back. And of course, we do have Ben Bernanke speaking today and tomorrow, and a lot of things. So we'll have to see if gold holds up this week. I think it might be a little bit of a tough week for gold. So I'm pleased that it was able to claw its back, way back of $10. The USDX today was up 0.12 at 81.82. And crude oil, they hit crude oil today, down a buck and a half at 103.07. Stock markets today, not a lot of action there. They tried to get the Dow up, but it's basically unchanged from yesterday, down a point at 15.520. Along with the NASDAQ up 17 points at 36.16, S&P mainly unchanged from yesterday at 16.85. And it does look like the 10-year yield is beginning to move a little bit, 2.60, up 0.02. You are listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. If you have any questions for today's program, please direct them to questions at DGScoins.com. Questions at DGScoins.com. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Hi, Al.
Hi. Not much to say about the market, just another day. Nothing exploded and burst into flames. Nothing went up too much. Nothing went down too much.
Just another day in the neighborhood.
Business as usual, that's all.
Business as usual. However, people should appreciate these days because I think we're certainly getting a little bit of a calm here, a calm in the markets. Gold is pretty much doing what I expected it to do once it closed above 1300. I'd like to see a trade here, and then I believe it's going to take its next leg upward come this fall, beginning in September. But the unemployment rates rise. It's interesting because the Labor Department said today that the unemployment rates rose in 347 of the large metro areas in June compared with the previous month.
You know what that tells you, Melody?
It tells me a lot.
Not an election year.
Yeah.
If unemployment is rising, that means it's definitely not an election year. In election years, unemployment is falling. Whether it really falls or not is another question, but at least the unemployment rate is falling, you're probably in an election year. If it's rising, you're not.
Well, they actually do blame it a little bit more on the seasonal changes, but to me, that's the true unemployment of this country, because those seasonal people are looking for jobs. And, they cited as June as college graduates and many of those still in school begin searching for jobs. Unlike the national figures, the metro unemployment data are not adjusted for such seasonal changes. Many of these cities with significant rate increases have large universities, in which we just mentioned that you'll have the students begin looking for jobs. The city with the nation's lowest unemployment rate was Bismarck, North Dakota, where the rate was 2.8%.
Isn't Bismarck the state capital?
I believe it is.
Yeah.
Yuma, Arizona, reported the highest rate at 31.8%. And, of course, Yuma has a very heavy population of migrant farm workers. Among the 49 cities with more than 1 million in population, do you think you can guess the city with the highest unemployment rate? Detroit?
Yeah, Detroit, of course.
At 10.3%, that's up from 9% in May. And, of course, the unemployment rate, I don't even know why they brought up Minneapolis. Minneapolis was 5.1%. It was the lowest among the large cities.
Well, you know, the whole idea that the Detroit unemployment rate is only 10.3%.
That should tell you something.
That's even, what's the probability that that's true?
Well, they fail to tell you that 25% of the population left. So
yeah, 25%, I don't know if the number, that figure is correct, but yeah,
yes.
A lot of people have left. A lot of people are on welfare. They don't, I presume that they don't count people on welfare as being unemployed. And that's, do you know if that's true or false?
No, unemployment is people looking for jobs.
No, looking for jobs, exactly.
That means
if you're looking for welfare, you're probably not deemed unemployed. Are you looking for a job? No, I'm trying to get signed up for welfare. Well, then you're not on the welfare rolls, are you? Or excuse me, not on the unemployment rolls. The other thing you pointed out that Bismarck, North Dakota, had the lowest unemployment rate. The only thing it reminds me of is it has a state capital. Throughout the country, state capitals for every state, or virtually every state, have a higher standard of living than the balance of the communities within that state. And the reason is because they are taxing the balance of the communities. They're bringing the money from the other towns and cities around the state, coming into the state capital. And that money, some of it sticks to the fingers of the local bureaucrats in the form of raises and pay hikes and pension plans and whatever. And it's typical across the country that your state capitals have higher standards of living than the average, certainly for the average, for the balance of the state, and generally higher than almost all of the rest of the cities. There'll be a couple of wealthy communities here and there that have, you've got a bunch of millionaires, billionaires, whatever, living there. They may exceed the state capital, but point, when you bring those taxes in, it enriches whatever community, whatever city is collecting those taxes. And in theory, the same thing should be true for Washington, D.C. And it's evidence that government has become something of a racket. Yet government is not simply a situation where they're here to serve us. They are not here to help us. They are here to help themselves. And it's part of the reason why Rand Institute, back 2 years ago thereabouts, calculated that the average federal worker, at least, was making about double what he could expect to make if he was doing the same job in the private sector. Include all the benefits and the rest of it. Government has become a profitable business. And it's unfortunate because the people in that business don't want to give up their advantages. They don't want to give up their financial advantages, which means they have a personal vested interest in trying to continue to overtax the balance of the people in this country. So, what else have we got, Melody?
And it's also just another distortion of from the reality of everything, you know, from the numbers that come out of Washington. Here's a U.S. consumer confidence. It dips from a five-year high. It's still high. It stayed close to a five-and-a-half-year high. But it just goes to show you that consumers are beginning to see, maybe they're beginning to see through all the smoke and mirrors that's being produced by Washington. Consumer confidence in the economy, the reason it's watched so closely is because that their spending accounts for 70% of the U.S. economic activity. So when you have reports about the jobs and the percentages and these towns that are being devastated with unemployment, you have to know that the economy is not doing very well. And also the this week's report, GDP, is going to show that the economic growth in April and June quarter, that comes out tomorrow, is going to be down. Many are looking for about a 1% or less from the subpar 1.8% that was reported for January to the March quarter. So, again, how can we have all these great jobs? How can the economy be recovering when you have numbers and reports like this?
Well, the truth is they're not. And the truth is people have to be sure that they're not going to be bamboozled by government numbers. You have to adjust your sights according to what the truth is rather than what the government reports the truth to be. And your sights and your objectives and your preparations, they've got to reflect what's really happening in this country. What's really happening in the world, for that matter? And trying to get straight answers out of the government is extremely difficult. And I'm not saying that the government lies every time it speaks, but it lies so much of the time, so obviously, so openly, that you wind up just necessarily distrusting almost everything government says. I'm not saying that government doesn't tell the truth some of the time, but you certainly have to look it over and make up your own mind. Is this plausible? Is it credible? Is it correct? And if it's not, what should I do?
Well, and it's difficult because when you're confused, when people are confused, they don't do anything. They're comfortable.
Yeah,
they're comfortable and thinking life will go on. And of course, life will go on, but it will change. But when they have this mass confusion, they don't know what to understand. You know, they don't know which way to believe. They end up not believing anything, so they end up doing nothing. And guess who gets hurt the most? It's those people.
Well, the lesson in all of this is that you have to pay attention, folks. Make up your mind what's going on. Learn for yourself what's going on and act accordingly. You can't allow yourself to be paralyzed by the confusion that exists. On the one hand, you look out the window and you see what looks like, perhaps you see a bunch of stores that are closed up in the local shopping center. That tells you something. On the other hand, you got the government sitting back and saying, we are heading for a recovery. That tells you something. Which one is true? You have contradictions there. Which one is true? You're going to have to figure out for yourselves who to believe, your own eyes, your own ears. You're going to believe what the government tells you. You're going to believe what you see for yourself or what you learn for yourself. And the reason you have to do that is because your future will depend on your ability to perceive the truth and prepare properly. Right? If you don't get to the truth, then you will not prepare for whatever may be coming. And if it's going to be a difficult time, if it turns out the difficult times really are coming at us and you're not prepared, guess what? You will be imperiled by your willingness to believe what the government tells you. They're going to tell you things are going okay, unemployment is going down, inflation is going down. Insofar as they tell us that, and we are lulled into a condition of false confidence. That confidence helps to hold the economy together for now, but sooner or later we're going to see truth. And when it happens, if it's contrary to what you're believing now, you will be imperiled. And all of it, you know, if you've listened to this program and others like it over a period of time, you know that we believe that more than likely, not absolutely, but the strong probability is we're going to see difficult times in the next several years. If we're right about that, you have to be prepared. And if you believe people, you know, I can't tell you we're giving you prophecy. I can't say this is, you know, God's truth that the economy is going to have a serious problem in the next couple of years. But everything you see, if you care to see, indicates that is almost certainly the truth. If it is, got to prepare.
And Murray wrote in about the Bank of North Dakota. We were talking about Dakota, North Dakota, Bismarck, and he wrote in about it helps that they have the Bank of North Dakota, which is a state-owned and run financial institution. And under the state law, the bank is the state of North Dakota doing business as the Bank of North Dakota. And I guess the state and state agencies are required to place their funds in the bank, and local governments are not required to do so. And I believe there is some protections there. A lot of people think this is, and maybe it is the way in which banks should be run. But, you know, I it's probably better than the federally run banks, that's for sure.
Well, let me make sure that I understand what you're saying. You're saying that the Bank of North Dakota is supervised by the government of the North Dakota, or are you saying it's actually part of the government of North Dakota?
It is state-owned.
State-owned. Yeah, I get
that. State-owned.
Well, one of those things you look at and you have to say, you know, it's probably not a bad thing for North Dakota. Mm-hmm. If they have the lowest rate of unemployment, well, that was Bismarck, South Dakota, wasn't it?
No, it's North Dakota.
Was it Bismarck or North Dakota? I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, in any case, if they're doing well, you got to give them credit. If they're doing well, I guess they're doing well. And it would probably be, on the one hand, if we allowed banks to be run more by the states than by the federal government, there are dangers in that, but there may also be, you know, advantages. It means that if your particular state mismanages the banking system, and there'll be strong temptation to do it, and probably that mismanagement would be easier at a state level than perhaps at a federal level, then your state might pay a serious price if you had banks that were essentially managed by the state rather than managed by the federal government, especially with something like FDIC. But on the other hand, if you have your banking system is essentially controlled from the federal level, then if something happens at the federal level, every bank in the country will be imperiled. There's something to be said for having state-managed banking systems in that at least some of them may be smart enough to get out of harm's way. Huh? Some of those lifeboats will not sink when the federal system, if it goes down, it wouldn't take many of those state systems with it. That's a possibility. Right? So what do you do? What do you do, Melody? Do you go with the state or do you go with the federal? Which is better?
I would prefer myself and buy gold and silver and be my own bank.
That's exactly right. That's the third choice. If you have... You essentially have an opportunity to save your money with the Bloods, or you could save your money, deposit it with the Crips. Now, which one is better, the Bloods or the Crips? The best one is to take the money and squirrel it away in your own property. And that's where we're talking about gold and silver again. We have jeopardy. There's a certain amount of liability no matter what banking level you work at right now, whether it's state or federal. You're still exposed. We have a system based on fiat currency. The fiat currency is a lie. You're exposed to liability. Solution? Maybe you get your own gold and your own silver and you protect yourself. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here at Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What do folks need to know today, Melody?
Well, we have a couple announcements right now. First, I want to encourage the listeners to go to our website, dgscoins.com. DGS for Discount Gold, silvercoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter. And, of course, the programs are archived, so you have access to them. There was another announcement I was going to talk about. So just visit our website, dgscoins.com. And, of course, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs. And two announcements today. Robert Chapman, his wife, Judy, she became very ill over this weekend. I guess it's been a long time.
Building
for her illness, but they put a stent to increase blood flow to her intestines, and I guess her kidneys are not functioning at all. She's in intensive care, but they could transfer her to a regular room if they can stabilize her.
And she, of course, is Bob Chapman's wife. Bob Chip passed away, what,
June?
15 months ago, something like
yes,
that?
Yes, last June.
13 months ago?
Yes.
Okay, 13 months ago. Bob was a regular on the program and quite a character. A lot of people really enjoyed listening to Bob. And now his wife is also having a difficult time. So
if you'd like to send them, for those of you who are subscribed to the International Forecaster, send her a note, wish her well, let her know that she's in your prayers, and we'll make sure we keep her in our prayers. And so they don't expect her to get much better. They can really only try to sustain her. So send her wishes and keep her in your prayers. The second announcement is tomorrow. We do have a guest, David Krieger. He's been on the program, I guess, about twice before. And we'll be talking about gold and silver, of course. And he's our wholesaler, and he just has lots of good information. So make sure you tune in tomorrow.
Okay, what's next, Melody?
We're going to talk a little bit about the NSA, or would you...
I've got one here from Ron Paul. We'll get to NSA in a minute. Here's Ron Paul. House leadership voted for police state. This is from the Washington Times. Former Representative Ron Paul says that even an amendment to defund some of the surveillance programs at the National Security Agency, even if it had passed last week, the U.S. House of Representatives, it would have been a significant symbolic victory, but possibly little more than that. He would expect... Paul essentially saying he expects the security agency to keep running no matter what happens. He doesn't come out and say so in this interview, but he suggests that they may even have independent sources of funding. And that's not surprising, because over the years, they've tried to keep the funding for the CIA, for example, on black books, where Russia, our enemies, the Soviet Union at the time, they couldn't tell how much money was being spent on our national security intelligence agencies, and knowing how much we were spending would give them a clue to what we were doing. Right? If they can't track the money, they can't tell what we're doing. There's a good chance that the National Security Agency to this day has financial sources that are not immediately apparent. And that being the case, now, it's not a matter of whether the Soviet Union knows what they're doing. It's a matter of whether the American people know what they're doing. And by and large, we do not. Again, Paul says the U.S. government has built the largest and most sophisticated spying apparatus in the history of the world. And he says over the last week, we've seen two significant prison breaks. One in Iraq, where some 500 al-Qaeda members broke out of the infamous Abu Ghraib prison, which the U.S. built, and another 1,000 escaped in a huge break in Benghazi, Libya, the city where U.S. ambassador was killed by rebels that the U.S. government helped put in power. Now, this is Ron Paul speaking. And he says, did the U.S. intelligence community, focused on listening to our phone calls, not see this real threat coming? I mean, how is it that the intelligence agency, they're all about studying what you're doing and I'm doing and watching the metadata on our telephone calls and our internet communications. How is it that they missed a break, two prison breaks, one of 500 al-Qaeda and the other one for 1,000 in Benghazi, Libya? How did they miss that? Paul writes to the representative, Justin Amish, proposed a reduction to propose defunding the NSA. And Paul says this was at least, this would bring attention to the U.S., to what the U.S. intelligence community has become. An incredibly powerful conglomeration of secret government agencies that seem to view Americans as the real threat. Now, Paul is absolutely right about that, and it's an idea that I've tried to explain to people for, 15, 20 years. The relationship between ourselves and our government is adversarial. And that's true in every country in the world. The government is constantly trying to tell this government, our government, the government of China, the government of India, the government of England, the government of any government you got is trying to sell the people on the idea that the government is there to help them, the people. But in fact, government is not there to help the people. It never is. It's primarily there to help the government. They are independent and separate from the people, and they understand that they are the adversaries of the American people. The American people, by and large, do not understand that the relationship of ourselves to our government is adversarial. We understand that it's maybe aggravating or annoying, but we still operate on the presumption that government is here to help us. That's where our mindset is. George Washington famously remarked, I bring this up on a regular basis, but he described government as like, he compared it to fire. And he said, government, like fire, is a dangerous servant or a fearful master. That was Washington's description, and the founders agreed with that. It's the reason we have three branches of government in the Constitution. It's the reason we have the right of political free speech and the right of freedom of the press. They are not intended to tell us what Britney Spears is doing right now. We don't have freedom of the press so we can find out what, I don't know, Kardashian, whatever one of the Kardashians are doing. We have freedom of the press so we can find out what the government is up to because the founders didn't trust the government as far as they could throw it. They understood that government was a necessary evil, but they did not regard it as some benign institution that we could always trust. Again, Washington saw it as, at best, a dangerous servant, and if you didn't keep your eye on that dangerous servant, if you turned your back on it, if you were foolish enough to believe that that servant was really there to help you, that servant would morph into a fearful master. And that's what we're seeing right now in this country. So here we have Ron Paul. I've been trying to communicate that idea for 15 years, and here we have Ron Paul saying that the secret, he's referring to a conglomeration of secret government agencies that seem to view Americans as the real threat. They don't seem to. They know we're the real threat. You know, it's like top secret information. I can remember when they built the American embassy in Moscow. This probably goes back into the 1980s, maybe the 70s, but I believe in the 80s, they built a new embassy. They understood that the beams and the bricks and everything that went into that building, much of it included listening devices that were installed by the Soviet Union in the building of the American embassy. Furthermore, the embassy was built at one of the lowest spots in all of Moscow. It was built in a depression, which means they wouldn't have the same access to radio signals as if they'd been built at a higher location. Did our government care that it was being spied on? Everybody knew that you wouldn't be able to use a bathroom without somebody in the Soviet Union and Soviet intelligence telling what kind of toilet paper you were using. The place was littered. Did our government care? No. They didn't care what the Russians knew about us. They tell the American people, oh, we can't tell you. We've got to keep this stuff secret so the Russians, the Soviet Union doesn't find out. They didn't care about them. They cared about what you found out. And the Soviet Union was the same way. When they built their embassy, or similarly, they built their embassy about the same time in Washington, D.C. It was built on the highest hill in Washington, D.C. It had access to microwave communication moving through Washington, D.C. It was a perfect facility for spying on whatever electronic communications took place in Washington, D.C. Did our government care? No, we didn't really care what the Soviets knew about what was happening in this country, nor did the Soviets care what we knew about what's going on in the Soviet Union. The Soviets didn't want the people of the Soviet Union to know what's going on in their country, just as our government doesn't want you and me to know what's going on in our country. Governments everywhere recognize the people as their primary adversaries, and here's Ron Paul essentially admitting the same thing. Again, a powerful and incredibly powerful conglomeration of secret government agencies that seem to view Americans as the real threat. They don't seem to view, they do. They see us as the real threat, and they're right. If you people ever find out what's really going on in this country, you would be marching. You wouldn't be sitting on the couch listening to a radio program. You would be marching, demanding that the government make dramatic changes and actually begin to do what's right for the American people rather than what's best for the government itself. So it was just interesting to me to see that Ron Paul, he's talking about it. Government as the adversary, not as the benign benefactor.
Well, you know, Al, there's been numerous polls taken since the reporting on the secret NSA activities. And it show, and they've recaptured this, and it shows that perhaps there is a major shift in public opinion. And the poll was taken by Pew, P-E-W, finds that a majority of Americans, 56%, say that the federal courts fail to provide adequate limits on the telephone and internet data the government is collecting as part of its anti-terrorism effects. Mm-hmm. And even a larger percentage, 70%, believes that the government uses this data for purposes other than investigating terrorism. Moreover, 63% think that the government is also gathering information about the content of communications. This article that I was reading from shows that it demonstrates a decisive rejection of the U.S. government's three primary defenses of its secret programs. There is adequate oversight. They're not listening to the content of communication, and the spying is only used to keep you safe.
Yeah, that's a bunch of crap.
I know.
The spying is only used to keep the government safe.
Right. But
that's the safety they're concerned about. And they try to equate national security with government. When they talk about national security on a regular basis, they say we're doing this for national security. When they say national security, they mean government security.
You know, this article states that there's another percent. The most striking find and was overall 47% say their greater concern about government anti-terrorism policies is that they have gone too far in restricting the average person's civil liberties, while 35% say they are more concerned that policies have not gone far enough to protect the country. To me, they might think this is a striking find, but to me it's a shocking find.
The 35%.
Are still concerned that the policies have not gone far enough, and only 47% say their greater concern about government anti-terrorism policies has gone too far. I mean, that 47% should be 80%.
Well, what you need to do is find the same survey that was conducted a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and then we find out whether it was 30%. That thought the government had gone too far, maybe a year ago or 2 years. Now it's 47%. It's which way are the trends working? It's not just a question of which is growing faster. That's
the article is leading to that more people are beginning to be concerned mm-hmm. about the intrusions that the government is having on our personal lives. But mm-hmm. I still think 47% is still a shocking low number, even though it's up. I think it's still shockingly low. And what's interesting, too, is we divide this country anymore. Look how many folks are on government benefits. And so you kind of see these numbers kind of matching along those same lines.
Well,
get my point.
We have seen numbers move. People are increasingly sympathetic to the kinds of ideas that we espouse on this program. I've seen a couple of studies in the last month that indicate that roughly 75% of the people no longer trust the government. I just flat out 3 out of 4 just saying, I don't trust these people. Well, it used to be, the level of distrust was much lower. The level of distrust is growing. I think that's a wonderful thing. You know, the whole idea behind the Constitution, it is the genius of the Constitution, is that it's an anti-government document. And a lot of people say this, well, how can the Constitution be an anti-government document? It effectively created the government. Well, yeah, but it created all of these limits, the checks and balances, the three branches of government. Again, freedom of speech, freedom of press, right to keep and bear arms, elections every 2 years. All of this was intended to give us the means to protect ourselves against the government. It is fundamentally an anti-government document. It's the genius of the Constitution as originally devised. We would do well to regain that attitude. I'm not suggesting we're going to go bomb Washington, D.C., but we need to get into a mindset where we understand you're crazy if you trust these people. You understand? You are crazy. You are risking your future. You're risking your children's future every time you automatically believe whatever it is government has to say. And the evidence of that is look at the economy. Where are we? Who's been managing the economy? Not me, not Melody. I guarantee it's been managed by Barack and by Ben Bernanke. They're the ones that are trying to allegedly hold this together. And what have they done? They've turned us from the richest nation on earth when I was a little boy to right now the world's biggest debtor. This has been done by your government to you, to your children, to your grandchildren, and they say they're here to help us. We don't need that kind of help. I'm Alfred Ask. This is Financial Survival here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. Frank? Frank, that means it's time for the bumper music. We're going to have to get some grease for the little button. Frank has problems with the button sometimes that you got to push to get the bumper music to play. And Frank is, I'm not absolutely certain, Frank. Do you want to send us a clue by instant? Aha! Ha ha! There's the music, folks. We'll be back in a moment.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, we got something in from Robert. He says, just think if we had not lost the brave soldiers, no one injured, and the money back in our pocket. And what he's referencing is he sent me a little tidbit here. Iraq, Afghanistan wars will cost the U.S. $4.6 trillion. It'll run between $4 and $6 trillion, making them the most expensive conflicts in the U.S. history, according to a new report by a prominent Harvard University researcher. While Washington has already spent close to $2 trillion in direct costs related to its military campaigns in the two countries, that total represents only a fraction of the total war costs.
So it'll be a war that we keep paying for, even for years after the war is finished, we'll still be paying for it. One of the, you know, you can't get a good war going in this world without credit. If we lived in a world where credit was not easily accessible, particularly by government, and government could not do deficit financing, there'd be very few wars. You couldn't invade a country because in order to invade, you have to have credit or you have to have wealth stored up. And then they'd have to look at it and say, well, I think we can invade Iraq for $1 trillion. And if it costs $2 trillion, if they had $1 trillion stored up in a war chest, all right, once we ran out of that $1 trillion, they have to end the war. But as long as they have credit, they can go to war and the public doesn't mind at the time, because the public isn't paying. They don't see the costs imposed on them right now. The costs are left for another year, another time. They fight now, pay later. That's essentially the motto. If government didn't have access to credit, the only way they could initiate war is by overtaxing the people to put hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars away in a war chest. All by itself, that overtaxation would cause people to riot. They would disagree. They would complain. We don't want to be paying all these damn, what are we paying all this money for? And the government couldn't very well say, well, we're taxing you now. We're overtaxing you now. So we'll have enough money to invade Libya. You know how important it is to invade Libya or maybe Syria or Iraq or Afghanistan. The public wouldn't go for it. Point I'm just trying to make. You can't have. Time magazine had a series. They're like mini encyclopedias that deal with a particular subject. And one of them was the 20th century. And they had a series out, The Century of War. Right? And talked about World War II and World War I and the different conflicts and so on. It wasn't the century of war. It was the century of credit. If the government ever had to go back and live within its means on a pay-as-you-go basis, we wouldn't have many wars. And the only ones we'd ever get caught in are defensive wars. I mean, we might be able to build up our defenses, but we wouldn't have the money to go off and initiate war in Afghanistan, Iraq, wherever. We could defend the country, but so on and so forth. So it's another illustration, to my mind, of why it would be important to go back to a gold and silver-based monetary system, because it prevents government from spending money out of thin air. It prevents government from basing its activities on credit rather than pay-as-you-go taxes. And we wouldn't have anywhere near as much war. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be caught in all these damn debacles in the Middle East and so on. Wouldn't be our problem. What else we have, Melody?
Paul Milcrest. About fractional reserve gold banking system may be breaking down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's put out a report recalculates a report done for the Reserve Bank of India in January. Estimates that the gold paper and derivatives market, and this is globally, is 92 times larger than the market for real metal. In other words, for every dollar's worth of physical gold that's traded on the world's gold markets, for every dollar in real gold, physical gold that's traded, there are $92 worth of paper gold being traded. And the implication is that when we see the price of gold on COMEX, for example, what we're really seeing is the price of paper gold rather than the price of physical gold. Physical gold is just a little over 1% of the volume of what's being traded globally. The vast majority is paper gold. All by itself, it tells you that we are going to see a day when the price of physical gold is clearly distinguished from the price of paper gold. The price of paper gold might fall to $1,000 an ounce. but the price of physical gold might at the same time be $2,000 an ounce. Maybe more than that, maybe $10,000. I don't know where it's going to go, but it's just evidence. And it's not the first time we've seen it, but it's just more evidence from the Bank of India that the current markets measure the price of paper gold rather than physical gold. He says, again, this report, the gold market is a gigantic fractional reserve system consisting of a vast quantity of paper claims to gold bullion and a much smaller inventory of actual bullion. ABN AMRO, Rabobank has followed the footsteps of ABN AMRO. These are both Dutch banks in suspending delivery of physical bullion to its clients. And they are wondering whether we are seeing a breakdown in the physical versus paper gold markets. Is that breakdown approaching, leading to price discovery for physical gold itself? And, of course, I would argue, absolutely, we're going to see that. You and I are going to see in this lifetime, and probably within the next couple of years, we are going to be able to see very clearly that the price of paper gold and the price of physical gold are two dramatically different prices. And when that day comes, those of you that are holding physical gold are going to say, yippee. You're going to be very happy with yourselves. Those of you who are holding any variety of paper are going to be much displeased. What else, Melody?
We do have a caller. We have Earl calling in from Oregon.
Hello, Earl.
Hi.
Earl, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, but it's a little bit garbled.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You were talking about that wars are not possible without banks and credit.
I won't say they're impossible, but they're improbable. They're less likely, much less likely without credit.
Okay, so you know the one of the things that the banks when they want to lend money when they decide to lend money, the banks ask, "Well, how are you going to pay for this?" And so the government, even governments, if they're going to beg from a bank, they've got to have an answer to that question: how are you going to pay for this? And it allowed me to put the pieces together of the Spanish. You know, there was a telephone tax from the Spanish-American War, and then you have the income tax right before the First World War, and then there's the Social Security tax before the Second World War, and then before the Vietnam War took off, they took Medicare. They made that a tax, and they folded that in with Social Security. And now we have a new tax, and it's a big tax. Which means
Obamacare. This
is going to be a really big war they're planning.
Are you talking about Obamacare as the new tax?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me that the federal government, before it starts a big war, it puts a tax on people because they have to have a way to pay the banks back for the money they borrow. That's my question to you is, what do you think?
I think you may be correct, and I think beyond that, we can ask an interesting question. Who is going to receive the money out of the Social Security Fund? Will it be the people who contributed to Social Security as a form for as protection for their retirement when they became senior citizens? Are they going to get the money, or will that money Has that money already been used to fund wars we've been going through and perhaps wars we're going to go through? And I'm simply saying, how much of the money that we contribute to government in the form of pensions is intended to really provide for our old age, and how much is intended to be an extra tax to provide for whatever wars we have to engage in or the government chooses to engage in during our productive years? You do follow what I'm saying, Earl?
I do, but here's the thing: is the banks want to see an income, and Social Security fund paying Social Security out doesn't see the tax. The people don't require seeing the tax from government, but the banks do require seeing the tax, and so that's why that's the purpose of the tax is because the government has to show The federal government has to show the banks how they're going to pay for that. They don't want to just see, well, we're going to pay.
No, I guess business is business. Business is business. They've got to show them how they're going to pay.
They want to see it on paper that this is how much you have coming in, and this is how you're going to pay for it.
And they persuade the people. They persuade the people to essentially believe that Social Security isn't really a tax. You're kind of squirreling it away in your own bank account for your retirement. It is a tax, of course, but the people don't quite see it that way, so they don't mind paying it because they think it's going to be there for their retirement, and there's a good chance it's going to be there to pay for rockets, bombs, and missiles that were expended in Iraq, Afghanistan, perhaps Syria, Libya, wherever.
Well, that was my question. Thank you.
All right, Earl. Thank you.
Well, yeah, it's a really good point there. But you know what? Before we go to any war, I mean, we're supposed to have politicians that are supposed to be representative of the people and looking out for our best interests. So many of these wars, of course, are it's all done for money. And yes, the taxpayers end up paying for it through various different types of taxes. But, I mean, we also see who gets wealthy from these wars. I mean, yeah. They become very powerful. They become wealthy. And that's why these wars are created. So I think taxes for wars have changed. I think he made some very valid points in for the earlier wars. I'm not so sure about these later wars. But
I'll tell you one thing that he did. He mentioned how are you going to pay for it? The banks want to know, how are you going to pay for the war?
Yeah.
And it reminds me of a movie that I saw years ago that was about Pancho Villa. And Pancho Villa was setting up a new government in Mexico after he was involved in a revolution down there. And they ordered, I don't remember, who knows, let's say $1 billion worth of Mexican pesos to be printed up by some printing company. And the printing company came down and they delivered the $1 billion, or maybe it was $1 million, but whatever it was. They delivered this carload of paper Mexican pesos. And they say, okay, now you owe us $100,000 for printing $1 million worth of Mexican pesos. And Pancho Villa tells one of his helpers, he says, go peel $100,000 off the stack of the pesos we just handed printed up and give it to the printers. And the printer says, no, we aren't going to take those things. You're not going to pay us with the stuff we just printed for you. You're going to have to pay us with gold or silver. And Pancho Villa was much surprised. He didn't really grasp the idea behind money. But it illustrates something that today we have bankers who are taking those paper, essentially they're accepting the paper pesos rather than demanding to be paid in gold and silver. I mean, the implication of the movie, if I'm getting this idea across, is that people were smarter back in the 1800s than they are today. They understood more about money. They understood you can't, you got to pay with gold and silver. If you want payment, gold and silver. Want promise to pay? Paper. Paper is just a promise, and the promises we live, as we tell you a bunch of times on this program, there are too many promises for all of them to be kept. They can't all be kept. Many, most, perhaps 80, even 90% of the promises will have to be repudiated, they'll have to be denied, they'll have to be escaped by means of inflation. Those of you that are holding those paper promises to pay are in jeopardy. If you're sensible, you get away from the promises to pay and you get yourself a payment, which is gold or silver coins. We're about out of time, Melody. Anything you want to add in the last 10 seconds?
Give us a call, 1-800-375-4188, and be... You know, this is another topic perhaps we can touch on tomorrow, the difference of paper gold versus physical gold.
Okay.
Paper gold comes in a lot of forms.
Yep. All right, folks, I want to thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.